We are going to continue to move on. We have the grass action plan up next, and I believe Alex Solem is joining. Yep, there's Alex. Welcome, sir. You can begin whenever you're ready.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'll have Nick pull up my presentation and share it for you folks. All right. Can everybody hear me well before I begin?
Yes, we can.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. Again, thank you for having me today. I'm Alex Solem. I'm your Senior Upland Game Biologist, and I'll be presenting to you our Prairie Grouse Action Plan. If some of you remember back to the meeting we had last August, myself and Hillary presented updates to our larger Management of Prairie Grouse document that included some changes to our surveys, as well as energy developing guidelines and other mitigation efforts. So today I'm here to present kind of a smaller document for management strategies, objectives for our proposed Prairie Grouse Action Plan for the next 5 years. This smaller, more focused document was a group effort by GFP staff that definitely had a vested interest in prairie grouse conservation. So I'll go through a quick refresher on some prairie grouse species that we have in South Dakota for newer members of our commission and those less familiar in the audience. We have two species of true prairie grouse located in South Dakota, the sharp-tailed grouse, which is the picture on the top, and then the greater prairie chicken, which is the picture on the bottom. As you can see, the distinguishing feature between these two is primarily the shape of the tail. As the name suggests, sharp tails have tail feathers that come to a point, and prairie chickens have more of a rounded tail. Both species primarily occur in central and western part of the state, but they're definitely located East River, where we have adequate habitat. They're medium-sized game birds that are native to grassland habitats of North America. Both species of males display in the spring for courtships on areas known as leks. Leks are generally found in areas of high breeding potential, and these leks generally exist in areas with large intact grasslands. So for this reason, leks are generally the focal point of reproductive ecology. Both sharptails and prairie chickens are alike in a lot of ways, so in states where both these species occur, management for the species is generally the same. Go ahead, Nick. So as their name suggests, prairie grouse are dependent on grasslands. They require large tracts of intact grassland to persist. This makes them what we consider a flagship species for many grassland obligates. Their presence generally indicates a really healthy, functioning grassland ecosystem. And because of this, a lot of the management practices and objectives discussed today and that have occurred in the past tend to be habitat-based. But without a doubt, any prairie-dependent species, both game and non-game, will certainly benefit from management actions for prairie grouse. Go ahead, Nick. So grasslands are one of the most imperiled ecosystems in the northern Great Plains, actually in the world. And this is generally caused by cropland conversion. It's estimated since 1980, nearly 4.5 million acres of grasslands have been converted to cropland. So the severe loss of native grasslands has resulted in a range-wide decrease in abundance, as well as distribution of prairie grouse species. So because of this, conversion to grasslands is generally the primary threat that we see to prairie grouse in the northern Great Plains. In addition to grassland loss, competition from non-native grasses such as smooth brome, woody encroachments from cedars and junipers certainly have led to a decrease in the habitat quality where these critters exist. But by properly managing the habitat that we have and where these species are found, we can certainly ensure that we're setting the stage for this species to not only persist in South Dakota, but also flourish. Go ahead, Nick. So before we move on to some proposed objectives and strategies, some of these figures might look familiar. I'll quickly dive into how their populations are monitored from a GFP perspective. So we annually survey prairie grouse hunters to estimate harvest and hunter satisfaction. We also collect hunter harvested wings to estimate production on an annual basis. This gives us a little bit of insight onto how weather during the previous breeding season can influence production from year to year. And then we also monitor prairie grouse leks in the springtime to come up with a spring index and help develop some long-term trend data. However, the lek surveys were largely discontinued in 2019 to focus on some future population monitoring efforts. Ultimately, a lot of this information is used to develop a fall hunting forecast. These forecasts are helped to or used to inform prairie grouse hunters on what to expect in the field in a particular year. As you can see in the picture in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, we recently completed a spatially explicit habitat-based occurrence model while working with the North Dakota Game and Fish. As a result, we were able to predict prairie grouse occurrence and density based on some specific habitat variables. So not only were we able to produce some pretty maps that you see there, but it also gave us a tool to strategically implement conservation efforts and also standardize survey protocol for future population monitoring throughout their range. Now, I'm not going to bore you with the statistics behind it, but this effort certainly set the stage for some important conservation methods that I'll get into in the next slide. Go ahead, Nick. So because the conservation of grasslands is extremely important to grouse, and I don't think I can reiterate that point enough, we were able to develop a system of priority habitat areas to delineate the landscape for habitat that's necessary for sharptails and prairie chickens. These priority habitat areas are based on those spatially explicit habitat-based models, and that's certainly a mouthful. We actually processed the density layers from those models to specific thresholds, which we categorized as tier one, tier two, and tier three habitat types, as well as low quality or habitat probably not necessarily used by prairie grouse. The tier one habitat, which is indicated by the red on the maps, is what we identified as the best of the best prairie grouse habitat in the state. We did process East River and West River differently because habitat, as you can see in the figures there, is generally less abundant and more isolated east of the Missouri River. So essentially we created two maps, one for the prairie chicken, which is on the left, and then one for the sharp tails, which is on the right. But to kind of put these perspectives or put these importance of these priority habitats into perspective, when you combine the area of tier one to tier two and tier three habitat that we've identified, they only make up a small portion of the total area of the state, but they support a vast majority of prairie grouse that are out there. So since we've identified these important areas to these grouse, we can now, you know, focus conservation efforts in and around these areas. The specific practices kind of alluded to the last presentation that we went to, and they're going into more detail in our larger management of prairie grouse document. Go ahead, Nick. So with all the information that we gathered through our surveys, our modeling efforts, we can now put it to work for us to make sure prairie grouse are managed effectively in the state. Our management plan group identified essentially three objectives for prairie grouse management for the duration of this proposed action plan. They are promoting and implementing a responsible stewardship of habitat, essentially monitoring their abundance, harvest, as well as hunter satisfaction, and certainly addressing future concerns with energy development. They can be grouped into habitat conservation, surveys and monitoring, and then energy development. Go ahead, Nick. So, like I stated earlier in the presentation, the conservation of grasslands of the state is imperative for prairie grouse persisting in South Dakota. Most of the prairie grouse habitat in South Dakota is used for livestock grazing, and prairie grouse do very well in a well-managed grazing system. Essentially, what's good for the herd is good for the bird. We have a great opportunity with our priority habitat areas that we have identified to utilize science to implement conservation measures that will be beneficial to prairie grouse. So to do this, we need to get this information in the hands of our private lands biologists as well as partners to implement, you know, this strategic conservation approach. You know, they can essentially implement habitat conservation practices such as grassland restorations, water development, and cross fencing to achieve a landscape and get the vegetative structure out there that's most beneficial to prairie grouse. You know, our habitat recommendations, right now are rather broad, especially in our larger management prairie grouse document, but that's certainly by design. Each operation is unique, so it's imperative that producers and wildlife professionals, you know, work together to meet the short and long-term goals for prairie grouse habitat as well as rangeland health. And there's many ways to do that. But to assist our staff in implementing these best management practices for prairie grouse, you know, we'll produce a more detailed document kind of outlining a number of habitat recommendations essentially that they can pick from to implement. Go ahead, Nick. So moving on to the next objective, it's important that we continue to monitor their populations to make sure what conservation efforts that we're doing on the landscape is continuing to work. and if there are any future challenges out there that we need to be aware of. We will continue to collect data from our annual survey efforts. We'll summarize hunter harvest, hunter satisfaction, and again, we'll use all this information to inform our grouse hunting constituents on what their expectations can be in the field. Go ahead, Nick. Lastly, we got to be proactive in current and future issues that could impact prairie grouse populations. This certainly includes energy development. Areas with some of the highest wind potential in the state are areas that overlap with excellent grouse habitat. If you can think back to those priority habitat areas and then as well as the map that's kind of in the upper right-hand corner, those areas are certainly a lot alike. It's our priority essentially balance these two uses on the landscape. We can do that by continuing to support current and future energy development projects that we have ongoing to really measure the potential impacts and what we can certainly do to minimize them. This also includes providing the developers for these projects with proper survey protocols during the planning process to see if there are any potential impacts for prairie grouse, present before construction even begins. We also plan to provide the developers with an avoidance mitigation table that's on the bottom right-hand side of the screen. So this is a way that we can rate how well a developer used our guidelines to essentially avoid the highest quality prairie grouse habitat. It's a group effort. We hope to work with these developers to try to obviously avoid the highest priority areas or essentially work with them to provide any offsets for any unavoidable impact to prairie grouse and their habitats. Go ahead, Nick. So with that, that's all I have for you folks here today, and I'll certainly entertain any questions if you have any.
Yes, Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Commissioner Bartling. Can you tell me, over the last few years, I think we've somehow acres came out of CRP probably across a lot of the areas and whatnot. Has that had a significant impact on perhaps some declining population in certain areas of the grouse? And I just noticed on your maps in Gregory and Tripp County, for example, and I know a lot of that land was in CRP and is now out of it. So do you see some impact because of the movement in and out of the CRP program?
Through the chair. Yes, Commissioner, certainly. Even in some of our grouse occupancy modeling, CRP happened to be kind of indicative of a pretty good prairie grouse habitat. It all depends on where the CRP is located in the state. Some of our West River counties are one of those areas on the fringe of Missouri River where prairie grouse, tend to persist. Those areas, if we're taking any sort of grassland off the landscape, it's certainly going to have a negative impact on grouse.
Additional comments? Just one quick question for you, Alex. You had mentioned the energy developers and the efforts to make sure they're not constructing in some of those higher areas. Do we have any energy producers that have expressed any interest in helping with our habitat and partnering with the state?
I would probably have to defer in particular to Hillary, our senior biologist that deals with a lot of this. I know we go hand in hand, and I'm in a lot of the meetings when we're talking about these mitigation efforts and trying to work through certain types of practices that we know will kind of offset some of those losses. We have in particular a couple of the energy products that we're currently working on, those folks that are funding or the companies behind it, I mean, they've put their money where their mouth is and have provided funding to kind of investigate the impacts of energy development on prairie grouse. So, I mean, that's obviously good to see. But as it comes for like a conservation bank or any of that sort of stuff, I'd probably have to defer to Hillary for that.
Director Kirschman.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Tom Kirschman again, and following up on what Alex was just saying, I've had the opportunity to be involved with several hearings on wind energy projects over the years as well. And as Alex described, we do provide some recommendations on mitigation approaches depending on the location of the development of some of those wind farms. We talk about, what are some mitigation approaches, whether that's using some dollars to work with local landowners for grassland management or establishment of new grassland acres, things like that. And it will vary from developer to developer on their approach and what they do. A key to that is, you know, we provide recommendations, we have conversations. As an agency, we don't have the authority over saying you can or cannot do this, or you can or cannot develop. We simply try to provide as much information and recommendations to those folks to help through that process as they go through their permits through the Public Utilities Commission. We get asked questions there, and again, we continue to provide recommendations and ideas on habitat development, habitat improvements that can help offset or mitigate some of those potential concerns that exist.
Thank you, that helps. Commissioner Strange.
In sort of a disagreement with what you was telling, it seems like in our area, you know, when most of it's grassland, but wherever there are fields, corn, grain crops, all the grouse just gather there every fall. And it seems like it's a very good food supply for them. It helps them to get through the winter. I think some farming, some grain crops and whatever are very beneficial to the grouse. And just in your display, you said that more of it's taken out is bad, but I think that some farmland and some grain fields are a very good benefit to the grouse.
Very good. Any other comments, questions?
I have a question.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire.
Alex, Commissioner Whitmire. Now, where the wind towers, just to focus on those wind tower locations, you know, quite often those are at those crests of the hills, you know, the Catoal Prairie business. Well, that also happens to be pretty rough ground and really not conducive to tillage, you know, and so that tends to be grazing grounds, you know, with that kind of vegetation. With that correlation, I think, is that just, I mean, it's because of that, I mean, it's rangeland predominantly. I mean, is it the terrain or topographical variants have anything to do with the grouse, or is it just the fact that it's habitat and it just happens to cross over because that's where those a lot of those range areas are?
Yeah, through the chair. It happens, you know, there's a couple answers to that question. I mean, usually where you have areas of those rough terrain and that sort of stuff, like you say, it's an area where there tends to be a lot of grassland. Grouse are a landscape species, so they require, you know, miles of grassland to persist. They have large home ranges. We got to remember, you know, they're not earthworms, so they require grass for nesting and brood-rearing habitat and that sort of stuff. And, you know, generally speaking, especially for sharptails in particular, a lot of times those hilltops are where those leks are located at. In particular, you know, like I stated in the presentation there, where the lek is generally indicative of really good breeding habitat where you, you know, hens only nest so far from leks generally when it comes to selecting a nest site as well as brood rearing habitat. So I hope that certainly answers your question.
Adequately, thank you.
Yeah, very good.